Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Fred Bertelsen Old Time Radio Room for another edition of Radio Out of the Past. My name is Brad Snyder, your host for tonight, and we welcome you to this extravaganza. This is where we talk about old time radio, we listen to a show, and enjoy the fellowship that is old time radio, what we all enjoy. Later on, we will have a presentation from Daniel Vigil, and we'll find out what he's going to play when he plays it. So we kind of have a little surprise ahead for us. It was in the promo, but I'm sorry, I cannot remember right now what it said. However, Larry is not with us, but as always, Larry has left us a promo to update us on what's going on with Same Time, Same Station and Yesterday USA. So let's give it a listen.
Hi, let's talk about Same Time, Same Station first. We're going to be hearing Howard McNear Part 8 in this particular week, and we'll hear Proudly We Hail, Barbara of Middlevale. We'll hear Hallmark Playhouse, and this is Parnassus on Wheels. And then the NBC University Theater, The Grapes of Wrath. That's a full hour. So three offerings this time on Same Time, Same Station. And they're up every next week, probably sometime. You'll see them here at Radio Out of the Past. Yesterday, USA. Tonight, Walden and Patricia. Tomorrow, John and I and Walden and Bob Lyons will be back together. And Saturday, Walden and Patricia, and then John and I and Walden Sunday night. So looking forward to that. If Walden's here, he can talk about other guests that will be involved. And of course, the marathon coming up. And that is going to be May 4. And first time we've done it, I think, in May in quite a while. But lots of good stuff to get to with regard to the marathon. And we're just now getting some of the radio shows in from the hosts. So we hope you will enjoy that. That's really all I have. Let's go back to Brad.
All right. Thank you, Larry. And Walden is here to expand on what Larry told us about. Walden, I'm sure you've got lots more to tell us about.
Oh, I don't know about that, Brad, but I'll do my best I can. Anyway, I just got confirmation this Saturday night. Margaret O'Brien will be on Calamari's Hollywood 360, which is pretty exciting for reps. She'll be on 200 stations live with a listening membership of roughly about 1 million people. And she'll talk about her days of radio a little bit and help promote her appearance at Rep Showcase, which will be March 21, 23, 24. So we're looking forward to having Margaret help promote that this Saturday night live at Carl Murray's show, which will be, he's in Chicago. So it'll be 8 o'clock Chicago, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock this Pacific. And that's on Hollywood 360, and then it'll be released as a podcast Monday. So anyway, that's good news. That just came down in the last few seconds. Looking ahead of different things, let me just look at big picture stuff for you. I think that'd be more interesting. We'll have a simulcast with Johnny and Helen Holm on Tuesday, March the 12th. That'll be on both Yesterday USA and Radio Once More. And that'll start at noon Pacific. On Wednesday, March the 13th, we'll have an interesting guest, Stephen C. Smith. He wrote a fantastic book years ago on the music and life of Bernard Herrmann. Bernard Herrmann, of course, did a lot of great music on radio shows, especially Crime Classic for one, the main conductor for Orson Welles on Campbell Playhouse and Mercury Theater. And so we'll talk about the life and time with Bernard Herrmann with him. John Gurry had him on years ago. And so we're going to have him on to talk about that legendary music career. Then Perry Huntoon will be back on Bing Crosby, I think part 5 on March the 17th, St. Patrick's Day. Looking ahead, Rep Showcase will be here before you know it. And so I'll be flying out Tuesday the 19th. So Johnny and Helen are sitting with Patricia that Tuesday night, March 19th, Wednesday night, March 20th. Rep Showcase will start Thursday night at 7 o'clock with four recreations from Screen Guild. The show we picked is adorable. You'll hear CBS Mystery Theater. The show will be The Vow. This is where the nuns get involved with a crimester, with a mafia guy. It's an interesting story. Then you'll hear Voice of the Scarlet Queen, Tales of the Texas Ranger. That will be on Thursday night. Then we'll start on Friday morning. Around 9:15, we'll have a recreation of The First Nighter. Joe Webb will schedule to do a Zoom presentation on Theater 5 at 10 o'clock. 11 o'clock, we're going to do Cavalcade of America. This will be a story where Lincoln travels to Gettysburg and the behind the stories of the Gettysburg Address. That will be 11 o'clock. These are all West Coast time. Then at 1 o'clock, we'll have Grand Central Station by Mimi Gibson. 2 o'clock, Perry Huntoon to do the history and life and music of the Andrews Sisters. 3 o'clock, we have Mimi Gibson and Elliot Gould will be with us. Elliot Gould was in the TV movie MASH, hosted a lot of the Saturday Night Live TV shows over the years. He'll be in the Seattle area, so he's scheduled to drop by to be with us at Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock. 4:20, it's a Jim French production that Roger Kim will direct with Terry, who was a voiceover, Terry Rose, who is a local Seattle TV guy. But the interesting guy, it's based upon a talking dog. And David Ross will be the talking dog. David is the guy who pinch-hitted for Charles Osgood on many of Charles Osgood's radio shows on CBS for about 30 years. And he lives in the Seattle area, and so he'll be playing the part of the talking dog, which he did for the Jim French production. So that'll be at 4:20. And then at night will be Ethel and Albert. Ethel's and Albert's first kiss at the storyline. After that would be the Phil Harris Hour of Faith show. And that will be a lot of fun. I chose the one where they win all these games, these prizes on a game show, and they delivered all of them to their small little hotel room in Manhattan. Funny story. At 8:45, it will be The Great Gildersleeve starring Brad Zinn, Margaret O'Brien, Beverly Washburn. Then we move to Saturday. Saturday morning will be The Thin Man, a recreation of The Thin Man. John Lurie and Michael Hingston will be in the cast. This is a script from 1941 that we don't have a broadcast recording, so we got it from the Library of Congress. Same thing with The First Nighter and Grand Central Station. Those are scripts we got with no recordings. So we'll do three scripts with no recordings during showcase. At 10 o'clock, John Jensen will do the history of radio game shows. That will be his program for us. 11 o'clock will be Nightbeat. And that should be a fun show where about 4 to 5 females all are fighting over the same guy. And poor Randy Stone is trying to figure this all out. So that will be Nightbeat with Karen Grime, Beverly Washburn, and others, along with Brad Zinn. 1 o'clock will be Fred McGee and Molly with Steffi Singer and Brad Zinn. I chose Teenage Cat. And this is where Teenage Cat goes underneath Fibber and Molly's house. And how in the world are they going to find this cat? So that will be good. Jeanne d'Olivier does a great cat, so I thought it'd be perfect for her. Then Perry Huntoon will do the history of Bing Crosby on radio at 2 o'clock. At 3 o'clock, John Lurie will interview both Margaret O'Brien and Karen Grimes together at 3 o'clock. At 4:20, it will be Sherlock Holmes with Craig Wichman and Larry Albert. And Larry Albert is now had the longest run as Dr. Watson on American radio. And so appropriate, what we're doing a early Sherlock Holmes. That will be on Saturday at 4:20. That evening, we'll do, after dinner, another Ethel and Albert. We'll do the Grand Canyon. And it's a funny script. I really love the script. So that'll be with Stuffy Singer and Beverly Washburn. Roger Kim has written a new mystery play starring Margaret O'Brien at 8 o'clock. And then at 8:45 will be the Jack Benny Show starring Brad Jen, which all our favorite radio personalities in the show. From 1947 is what I chose. Then Sunday morning we'll have breakfast. And at 10 o'clock, John Roy will interview Ann Whitfield. And so she played Phyllis, the little girl on the Phil Harris Our Face show, had a long run in One Man Family and many other radio shows. They'll interview her and we'll give her the Lifetime Achievement Award. And so that will be on Sunday. Then, looking ahead, just briefly, Saturday, April the 13th, Jerry Beck will be on Yesterday USA talking about cartoons. I think that's, I don't want to get too far ahead, and I think, yeah, we talked about the marathon on May 4th. We're trying to get Keith Scott and Joe Webb to talk about suspense with a part of the marathon. So Keith's on a cruise at the moment, and so I'm waiting for him to get back in town. And I'm trying to pull strings to see if we can get Keith Scott to come over to be at Rep Showcase next year at 2025. And Keith is an outstanding voiceover artist and loves old time radio. So those are some of the stuff we're trying to pull off for next year. So with that, back to you, Brad.
Wow. A lot of stuff. Thank you, Walden. I know I'm going to Reps and I'm looking forward to it. Now I'm even more excited knowing what all's going to be going on there. Elliot Gould, that'll be cool.
But yeah, we might even have Groucho Marx grandson with us too. We'll see.
Who's doing Tales of the Texas Rangers?
You know, it'd be a local rep stock production. You know, so most likely I'll have Ryan Asper, who's a good young actor playing the Tales of the Texas Rangers. But it'll be the local rep stock company that will do the Thursday night show. We'll ask them to get on stage a little bit,
That Thursday night is 4 weeks from today.
Yeah.
I know I'll be flying up from Anaheim where I'll be at CSUN. And I think John and I are on the same plane, so that'll be fun.
Yeah. Larry comes up the day before and you're coming up for that.
I think we land about 5:30, something like that. So we'll get to the hotel as fast as we can.
Yeah. So wait, Brad and John, are you guys are leaving together?
It works out that way. We're on the same plane.
They're not sitting next to each other. Together. They're on the same plane.
I know what you mean, but I mean, that'd be cool.
John's going to be getting to the airport on his own. He's going to come to CSUN on Wednesday and go to the exhibit hall, but I'm going to get there Sunday and I'll leave the hotel about noon, 11:30. It's a 2:40 something flight.
So you're heading out Thursday?
From Anaheim to Seattle, yes.
Right.
But I don't know. Hope to maybe get together with Matt Cox while I'm there. We'll see.
Definitely.
Anyhow, there's a bunch of people I need to see when I'm there. It's a quite the networking experience. So anyway, reps is going to be a lot of fun. That I'm really looking forward to. That's almost a highlight.
I'm going to try to make it to CSUN. There's no guarantee due to the fact that the previous week, my mom might want to go see her sister who has cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
On the 11th is her birthday. So I'm not sure if she's going to go want to go through like the 7th through the 11th, which is, you know, Thursday through Monday. So I don't know if I'll be able to make it to CSUN or not based on that.
Okay. Well, if you make it,
guys, I want to apologize. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can
hear you just fine.
I want to apologize for the noises that were made when I started. Well, I was coughing and stuff.
You heard that. It was no big deal. What? We heard it, but it was no big deal. It was quick and over, quiet.
Thank you.
You're fine. You're fine. Yeah, don't worry.
But you sound real good if you can just figure.
Yeah, you're on the phone, Joni.
For sure.
Yeah.
I didn't hear it. I don't know. I was talking. So I didn't hear it, so it didn't bother me. But I didn't. So.
Good.
You sound real good. It's a shame Star 6 doesn't seem to work too well.
Just next time you need to do the Wi-Fi or data thing.
Oh, is that you're on the app and you didn't? Yeah, it should ask you Wi-Fi or cellular.
Yeah,
Wi-Fi.
You're on
Wi-Fi/cellular. You should be able to go into settings and set that so it doesn't ask you.
Right, you're on. What are you on, Marcia? You sound different.
She's on her blind shell too.
Am
also, I should say.
Am I distorted at all? Am I too hot? Is it too hot?
You sound like you're in a can.
Yeah, you sound like you're in a can.
Oh man!
You don't sound as good as Joni.
Oh, and I'm on Wi-Fi too.
Well, I don't know.
It has to do with a blind shell and all the good stuff.
You're farther away. You're in Michigan.
I must have a tin ear because she sounds good to me.
Yeah,
you sound good awesome, to me too, Marcia.
You sound awesome, Shanti.
Oh, thank you. I'm using my iPad. Yeah.
Well, very nice.
No, Marcia sounds good. Joni sounds good. I mean, she sounds like she usually does on the phone.
Oh, thank you, Shanti.
So Walden, who's playing Phil Harris and Alice Faye and all that during those recreations?
We're going to have Karen Grimes play Alice and Bill Ratner, who is a really well-known voice guy here in the LA area. He's the G.I. Joe, the TV show.
Uh-huh.
And he's going to play Phil. Tommy Cook will play Frankie Remley, which will be good, you know.
He'll be good.
Yeah. John Lurie and Mike Hinton will have small parts in the show. If you haven't heard this particular broadcast, this is where the painter comes in to paint the room. The guy who moved the piano comes in the room. Like there's all these things happening, and these are a bunch of one-liners. So I gave those to John Lurie and Mike, and they're bothering Phil Harris with all these prices. You know, I think an airplane shows up inside a hotel room. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. So the sound effect people will be pretty busy throughout that whole show. Yeah. You know. So.
And who's good? Yeah. Who's good? Go ahead.
That's who will be it.
The scripts for that show remind me of some of these shows that come from the UK that they love to just do a chaotic thing where they dump one thing on top of another and you're going, oh my god.
yeah even a cow shows up and I've got different animals show up and the whole thing. It's just, you know, it's a pretty crazy show.
And Walden is going to be on the blue.
uh-huh
for the whole.
Be on the blue all day, then the red will pick you up during 7:30. But just stick it with the blue. Yeah, we'll
be on the blue the whole time, but the red only in.
Is that this weekend? I missed. I didn't. I came
It'll
into
be March, a month March from 21, 22, 23, 24. So a month away.
Ooh. Fantastic.
Yeah, so I'll kidnap Brad and have him be, help us out a little bit.
There's no kidnapping. Brad's there willingly.
I appreciate it, Brad.
You can't keep me away.
I need Brad's helping hand sometime to just make sure I got somebody behind the board. You know, so it's a simple setup. I stuck John, Lori, and Mike in rehearsal in a few shows, so I figure I need somebody back there just to make sure we're covered.
You guys will be fine. You guys are usually... Are those recreations that you guys do at Reps, are those going to be broadcast over Zoom or
We'll be broadcast at Zoom. It's amazing. When we did it in 2022... A lot of people watched it live over Zoom and also on Facebook Live.
Facebook.
And they showed up Saturday night. We were expecting this gigantic walk-up crowd. We ran out of food Saturday night because all these people watched it. And they just showed up.
At the showcase? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, there's nothing like being there live, honestly, you know, the interaction, I think we all know it, that we all enjoy in person.
For sure.
And I think what we do here is the next best thing of doing it live in person. And but it's just still there's something about being in person that makes it really special.
I went last year having no idea what to expect and just being in the room with a group of people that all enjoyed, you know, being there live and listening to these recreations and the famous people that were there. I mean, they're getting older, but they were there in the heyday of old time radio. And it was quite the experience. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
And let's face it, the people that we invite, they're good people, and it makes it fun for the audience to interact with them during meal time and just shooting the breeze. And it's just, it just makes it a really good time. One of my favorite memories of this hobby is having dinner with a well-known celebrity or whatever. My gosh, I had dinner with Peggy Webber 40 years ago this year at the Spurvac convention, the very first Spurvac convention. And her and I are still friends, and she's 97. You know, Mrs. Hudson of Sherlock Holmes and Ma of Friday of Dragnet. And just to think, if I first got a chance to break bread with her 40 years ago at a Spurvac convention, you know, so you just never know.
Yeah, that's cool. Is she still? I bet she's a fun lady to talk to and meet.
Yeah, she's got photographic memory. It's just incredible, and she's still working. She's still trying to get some of her stuff on the air. I mean, both have a meeting with her in a couple of weeks, trying to figure out how can we get some radio stations to carry her stuff. So she wants to help me. She wants me to help figure that out for her. So I'll be trying to.
She is.
She's 97.
And she still
That's
has
pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's getting ready to. She was thinking about recording some new shows, but she wants to get her old stuff out there. She spent out of her own pocket since over for 40 about $1 million just producing this stuff.
Yeah. So
she really believes in her stuff,
That's cool.
It's the classics, you know, well-known TV personalities over the years.
She's still producing things. I mean, you know, still putting things together
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Yes. You know, so
definitely.
She has a photographic memory too. It's just so, I mean, she can tell me exactly. Like for a couple, like last year, we figured it out. Remember, if you all remember hearing the 22 of the Dragnet Christmas show, 22 Rifle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wound up, we figured it out, and I confirmed with Peggy, said, yeah, she's the one that played the little boy in that show.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Peggy had the ability to play really old ladies or very, very young kids. And to think that Peggy Webber was playing a really young boy who shot his best friend.
That was a good one. That was, it really gets you, your emotions.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
It's a hard show to listen to because it's so realistic in a way. It's just.
Yeah. And the ending is really nice, though, where the father comes and gives him the toys. But it's those actresses are just amazing because there were a few of them out there, like what's her name? Something Fussell.
Sarah Fussell, yeah.
Yeah. She did Little Boys also.
Right, she did.
And Corrine Orr sometimes did Little Boys.
Mm-hmm.
That's good acting.
It really is. Really is.
Yep.
For TV, Bart Simpson's done by a woman.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. What's her name?
Marsha Wallace.
No, that's not Marsha Wallace. It's Nancy Cartwright. Nancy Cartwright.
Nancy Cartwright, that's it.
A few years ago, we had a Harry Shearer who parted a TV show. And of course, he was one of the little beavers on the Jack Benny radio show. And I looked it up. He was making on that TV show $350,000 per episode is what they were getting for that.
Which TV show? Simpsons.
Yeah.
Which TV show was it?
The Simpsons.
Oh, getting, okay.
Each voice actor getting $350,000 a show.
Episode, right.
That's not bad.
Not bad.
Not bad work if you can get it.
Oh, I used to love The Simpsons. I thought that was so good.
You can catch them on the Listen Factor. Denise plays them.
I believe they're still on, too. I believe. I'm not sure.
It's still on. They still have new episodes. It is the longest running show in television history.
And we are
over
at the
30 years nonstop.
And you know, it was funny. I was at some friend's house. I went from home to Grand Rapids, and I went to visit some friends, and they had two boys, and they were like 4 and 7, and they were saying previously, oh, this is not for young children. I'm like, guys, you know, Josh and Aaron are too young to watch this. Like, oh, we don't care. So
Humor appeals to both children and adults. It's
yes,
and the adult humor is not done in a way that's inappropriate for children. It's a pretty clever show.
It is
kind of like Rocky.
Yes, I agree.
Oh, the few that are very well done.
Good adults.
Mm-hmm.
Ways.
We're a little bit past the bottom of the hour.
Yes, I'm aware of what time we started late, but. Anyway, we are at that point. We're a little bit after the bottom of the hour. Daniel, I see you're in the room.
I am.
Are you ready to play?
I am, sir.
You want me to mute everybody? And
I can do all that. Well, you go ahead and do that. Go ahead.
You may do it all.
Can you co-host me so I can mute everybody?
Oh, yeah. Well, here, I'll mute you, and then I'll just mute everybody. You get started, and I'll co-host you once it gets going. How about
that? Will do. That sounds good.
All righty, here we go.
Is it only me that doesn't hear anything?
Yeah, Daniel, we're not hearing anything.
I don't know if you forgot to check that sound, the checkbox for the sound.
Yeah, they've changed.
Let me check my screen share and see what's going on.
You're screen sharing, but yeah, you might check that box thing is not.
Okay.
You might have to kill it and start over.
Do you hear anything at all or not?
No, nothing.
Nothing. Okay.
I heard you start the screen share and it says you're screen sharing, but.
Good evening, Thursday audience. Welcome to February 22nd, 2024, and some classic radio entertainment with me, Daniel V. Heal, in the Fred Bertelsen Memorial Old Time Radio Room, a part of RadioOutOfThePast.org. Tonight, we're going to continue our look at Radio KDKA broadcasting history. This is part 6 in the series, and it's called Serial Programs. Before that, let's start things off with an episode from the outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. This was broadcast on May 19th, 1949, and it's called Consequence.
Now, Autolite and its 60,000 dealers and service stations present
Suspense. Tonight, Autolite brings you James Stewart in Consequence, a suspense play produced and directed by Anton M. Leder. And now, Autolite presents James Stewart in a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Maybe the costume was the decisive factor, or maybe it would have happened anyway. In any event, the occasion was the 10th reunion, and the class of 29, as such occasions demand, the they were all dressed identically in cowboy suits. And there was Ted Wolfe, whom I hadn't seen in 10 years, although in college he'd been by far my closest friend. And so, of course, I brought him home to dinner. And Gwen managed to be quite charming, even though it was the maid's night out. She didn't even kick about the oven. And that's how it started out, just like that. Just like any pleasant, casual little evening.
Oh, Gwen, that was a wonderful meal. Last one I'll get like that for a while.
Thank you, sir.
Have you really got to go tonight, Ted? Can't you take a day or so?
No, not very well. I got my plane reservations and everything. Anyway, I told him I'd be back this week, and well, tonight's just about the deadline if I'm going to make it.
Well, what time's your plane?
3 a.m. Say, that reminds me, I can't go aboard in this thing.
Oh, you probably will. I think you're both kind of stuck on yourselves in those cowboy outfits. Worse than a couple of kids.
Sure, I'm going to wear mine to the hospital tomorrow.
Oh, fine. No kidding, though. People will think I'm nuts.
All right. Spoil sport. Now, we'll call the hotel later, have them bring your bags over, and you can change here. Although, I would think a cowboy suit would be a sensation in Ecuador.
Ted, are you really going to Ecuador?
Mm-hmm.
First, I thought it must be a joke.
No, you've heard me talk about the work Ted's doing there.
I know, but Ecuador.
Well, they've got to have medical care out on those plantations some way, and well, I like it.
I don't see how you stand it. Living like a hermit, cut off from civilization, not making... Well, I mean, they can't possibly pay you what you...
No, Gwen.
What time? Oh, my goodness, I've got to run.
Are you leaving us, Gwen?
I promised Mother I'd come out to the country tonight. Anyway, I know you two would much rather talk over old times by yourselves.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, in case I don't see you again, thanks for everything. It's been swell.
Well, you're coming back sometime, aren't you?
Oh, maybe 5 years, maybe 10, maybe never.
Oh, silly. You come back next year and plan to stay for a while.
Oh, thank you.
I am sorry I have to go, but you two have a nice evening. There are eggs in the icebox, Phil.
Okay.
Did he always have to have fried eggs at night when he was in college, Ted?
Yeah, that's Phil, all right.
Good night, darling. Don't bother coming to the door now. I'll phone you tomorrow night.
Bye, Gwen.
Have a good trip, Ted. Bye.
Goodbye. Yeah. You're a lucky man, Phil.
Am I?
Well, I suppose you know that the main reason I came to this shindig at all was to see you.
So why me? It's been a long time since you and I had the same dreams, Ted.
You haven't lost them, though. You're still in there pitching.
Oh, sure. Yes, yes. Private practice. 2 cars in the garage. 2 chickens in the pot. That's the kind of ball I've been pitching for the last 10 years. And it's the kind I'll keep on pitching until some other doc says coronary thrombosis and they carry me out.
You can't kid me, Phil. You're happy. I'd just about given up the idea that there was such a thing as a happy man.
And now you think you've found one.
Oh, I know I have. I knew it the minute I came into this room. I knew it the minute I saw her.
Gwen?
Yeah, Gwen.
I hate Gwen.
Phil.
And what's more, she hates me. Oh, it's nothing that shows on the surface. We get along because we have to. Because my reputation would suffer if we didn't.
Phil, you can't be serious.
No? Well, why do you think I've given up every dream I've ever had? Why do you think I spend my life treating the imaginary ills of a lot of wealthy hypochondriacs? So Gwen can have this and Gwen can do that. So Gwen can satisfy every greedy instinct and every petty, rotten ambition that any woman ever had.
Good Lord, I never realized.
Well, that's it.
You've got to do something about it, Phil. You've got to get out. Got to go to another city, go to another country.
Yeah. She'd be after me like a hawk. She'd have me up before the medical association. Oh, there are 1,000 things she could do and would do. Oh, I've thought of it every way there is. It's no use. So, it's off my chest. Now you know. And I'm sorry I disillusioned you. Excuse me. Dr. Martin? Oh, well, now? Right. I'll be right down.
You're not going out now. I want to talk to you.
No, well, I'm still a doctor. Even Gwen can't stop that. And I'll be back before you leave, though. And if you want to stick around, I'd sort of like to ride out the airport
with
you.
Was the call really important, Phil?
Yeah. Now make yourself at home. Fix yourself anything you want in the kitchen. Only look out for the oven. It leaks when you turn it off just right. And I won't be long.
Okay. I'll wait, Doctor.
Thanks, Doctor. I kind of hoped you would, Ted. That was the second thing. Ted's deciding to stay, but I didn't know it then. All I knew was that Jo had called me from the office and she was upset. Still, I decided to walk. I was upset, too. When I got there, she was going over the accounts. Hello, darling.
Hello. It was nice.
Well, isn't it always?
Always, terribly.
Well, what are you doing? Now, there isn't all that rush to get the bills out.
There is, though. For me.
For you?
Uh-huh.
Well, what is it, Joe? What's the matter?
Phil, I had a talk with Father this evening.
Well, something about us?
All about us.
Well, he doesn't know anything. He couldn't. Nobody, unless you told him.
You know I wouldn't do that, Phil.
I'm sorry, darling. I know.
Anyway, it isn't what he knows. It's what he thinks. We had an awful row. He said he'd go to the trustees of the hospital. He said he'd go to Gwen.
He said that?
That's why I'm getting the bills out for you now. Because I'm going away.
But you're going where? Well, how long?
No, darling, it's not going to be like that. It's for good.
Joe,
it's for good, Phil.
Well, Joe, I can't let you go. I know it hasn't been perfect, but I know it's been infinitely worse for you than for me, but at least we've had something. At least I've always known where you are, that you're here on the other side of the door and I could see you and talk to you.
I can't live with a door between us anymore.
Well, maybe you just don't love me enough to... No, darling, I don't mean that.
Phil, I'm not playing noble. This had to happen someday, and it has. And that's all.
I could go with you.
You couldn't do that, Phil.
Well, why not? I could change my name. We could go to another city, even another country. I could get back to research. I could...
Oh, darling. It's no go, Phil.
I asked her for a divorce again this morning.
You don't have to tell me the answer. There is no answer for us, Phil. Not one that we can take. And there we are.
Yeah. Yeah, there we are.
You'd better go now. I've got all this to do.
Oh, let me help you.
No.
Well, why not?
I could weaken. And then where would we be?
Oh, Joe.
No, Phil, please go.
Joe.
Please. Please, please.
All right, I'll go. I don't know how long I walked that night or where. Perhaps most men are weak and never know it. But when you're losing the woman you think you love, that's when you'll find out. That's when you'll see yourself at last in the pitiless glare of all your poor, frightened, childish helplessness. And I walked along, and I was sick to the depths of my soul. And I walked some more. I don't know, somewhere in the distance I heard a siren. There was a glow against the sky, a fire. And then I realized I was near my home. And then it wasn't just a glow against the sky of any fire. It was my own house. It burned almost to the ground.
Oh, this is terrible. How'd it happen?
Somebody said they think it was the gas stove.
Stunned and confused, I began edging through the crowd. And then there was a sudden stillness. And a few men took off their hats. And then I saw it. A stretcher. The blanket thrown over the shapeless form, and the blackened, shriveled cowboy boot. And I remembered. Ted had been in that house.
They just got him out now.
Yeah, what's left of him?
They say you wouldn't hardly know it was a man.
Frantically, I started forward, and then I stopped, because I thought somebody had spoken to me, but they hadn't. They weren't looking at me. They were looking at the ground and the stretcher, and that thing that lay there on it.
Dr. Philip Martin.
Yeah, I knew him. He was a good man.
Oh, poor Dr. Martin. What an awful way to die.
Suddenly, I was shaking with excitement. I pulled my hat down over my eyes. I turned up my collar, and I moved carefully back through the crowd, out into the street, and I turned the corner, and then I ran. Joe! Joe!
Phil!
Joe, I'm going with you.
Phil, you haven't...
Joe, it's all right. It's all right, Joe. I'll tell you later. But we're free, Joe. We're free. I'm dead. I mean, Dr. Philip Martin, he's dead.
For Suspense, Autolite is bringing you James Stewart in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage James Stewart as Phil in Consequence, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
There must be something of the criminal in every man, because it seemed that I knew automatically everything I would have to do and how I was going to do it.
Hotel Wilton.
Dr. Wolf, please. Dr. Theodore Wolf.
Thank you. I'm sorry, sir. Dr. Wolf doesn't answer.
Oh. Well, say, what's the number of his room again? I want to drop him a note.
Dr. Wolf is in 502.
502. Thank you very much. I knew in a big hotel like that, the chance of anyone remembering exactly what Ted had looked like were pretty slim. And I figured they'd give me the key all right, as long as I didn't have to stumble around asking for the number. I let myself into 502 and snapped on the light. I found the plane tickets on the bureau. Then I pried open his luggage and changed into one of his suits. Put on his hat and overcoat, just in case. Packed my own things away. There was a pair of dark glasses on the bureau, too. I put them on. Then I went downstairs, checked out, paying cash. I knew he bought the plane tickets at the airport and that the travel clerk in the hotel wouldn't know Ted Wolf from Adam.
Yes, sir?
I'm Dr. Wolf. I've been staying here at the hotel.
Oh, yes, doctor.
I have a through plane ticket here to Ecuador, Pan American, for tonight. I want to turn it in.
Oh, one moment, sir. That's Dr.
Dr. Theodore Wolf.
Pan American? Wilton Hotel. Got a through ticket to Ecuador. Dr. Wolf. Will you take it? Thank you. All right. That will be quite all right, Dr. Wolf.
And while we're at it, you might as well give me a couple of train tickets.
Yes, sir. Where to?
Huh?
I said, where to, sir?
Los Angeles. We've taken care of everything. A note to my bank, supposedly from Ted, enclosing Philip Martin's check for $5,000. And a letter in my own handwriting explaining that I'd agreed to lend him that amount. And asking the bank to forward the money to my account in Los Angeles. My account as Ted Wolf. And we drafted a letter to the people in Ecuador. And in Los Angeles, Joe became Mrs. Ted Wolf. And at first, everything clicked. I got the kind of a job a doctor dreams about, where I could write my own ticket and spend at least half my time entirely on research. And Joe started taking courses for a medical degree. After all, she was only 24. And then, right there, right in broad daylight in the hospital, it happened.
Hello?
Joe! Joe, pack a bag as quick as you can. Just enough for 2 or 3 days in the mountains. Now, just as fast as you can.
Phil!
It's Gwen. I saw her just now upstairs in the reception room.
Gwen, are you sure? Absolutely sure? Couldn't it be just a coincidence, Phil? I mean, couldn't Gwen maybe just have happened?
Maybe. Listen, Joe, I've been thinking.
She mustn't know where we go.
That's what I was thinking. Maybe it would be better if she did know where we were going.
If she did know?
I don't know. It may just be a coincidence. But if it is a showdown, the mountains is a better place than most.
All right.
I'll phone the landlady.
Is that safe?
Yeah, Gwen won't talk until she's sure.
Carlton Apartments, Mrs. Burton.
Hello, Mrs. Burton. This is Dr. Wolf. I wonder if you'd do me a favor.
Why, I'd be glad to, Dr. Wolf.
We're going out of town for a couple of days, and I just remembered some friends said they might stop by, and I thought they might like to join us, so I wanted them to know where we were.
All right, sir.
Now, maybe you could just stick a note in our door where they'll see it. We're going to Caribou Lake, and we'll be in the cottage at the very top of the mountain. It's right straight up a dirt road from the lake. They can't miss it.
Caribou Lake, the cottage at the top of the mountain, up the dirt road from the lake. Is that all, sir?
Yes, thank you, Miss Burton. That's all. Thank you. Caribou Lake is nothing more than a general store where you can buy bait and hire boats and cottages. That time of year, there's hardly anybody there except the people who own the store. And the cottage we had was a good 3 miles away up a twisting dirt road running above the lake. But you could see it very plain, even at night when the lights are on. We stopped in the store. We both went in to buy what we needed. Food, kerosene, matches, things like that. Then we went on up the mountain. By that time, it was almost dark, and Joe fixed something to eat. But neither of us could touch it. We were watching the road for lights of a car. It was about 8:30 when we saw them. And they went on past the store without stopping and came on up the mountain. It couldn't have been anyone else but Gwen.
Well?
Now, she didn't waste any time.
What if the car is rented?
No, she'd bring her own. She loves to drive.
Phil, you're not afraid, are you?
No. No, not anymore. I'll go.
Well, this is a surprise.
Hello, Gwen.
Dr. Martin, always poised. Nothing surprises you, does it?
I suppose it was the check.
Partly. Then I happened to notice that a Dr. Theodore Wolf had married a Miss Josephine Reynolds in Los Angeles. It did occur to me that your idealistic friend must have been an awfully fast worker. Well, aren't you and your bride going to ask me in?
Come in, Mrs. Martin.
Thank you. Quite cozy, aren't you?
We have been.
Well, I'm sorry to break up your little...
All right, cut it out, Gwen. Now, what do you want?
Dear man, what do you think I want?
And the way things are now, you've got $200,000 worth of life insurance coming to you. Why don't you let us alone?
Oh, Philip, I don't know whether you realize how much worry and anguish you've caused me.
Sure, I know. I know. I know just exactly how much.
And perhaps you also know exactly how you stand with the law in this matter. I don't know about all this impersonation business, except it would permanently ruin your career. But I do know that the laws covering bigamy are quite drastic.
Yeah, I used to think that money meant everything to you, Gwen, but I guess it doesn't, does it?
I certainly don't feel called upon to accept rebukes from you, Philip, for anything, not after what you've done. I feel that I'm being most generous to both of you.
All right, now, just what exactly do you want, Gwen?
Either you come back and we'll explain the whole thing as amnesia or something, or you both go to jail.
How could you?
Shut up.
Now, listen. Just a minute. Now, listen, Gwen. Does anybody else know about this?
Of course not.
Nobody knows you came out here, or why?
After all, Philip, I do have some pride left. Just that I was taking a little trip to New York to forget.
New York, huh? All right, Gwen, just give us a couple of minutes to talk this thing over, will you? Alone?
Very well. Although I don't see there's very much to talk about.
Will you go outside, or shall we?
I'll go. I'll wait in the car.
Oh, Phil.
It's all right, Joe. I don't mind now.
Neither do I.
Do you think you can do it?
Me?
I'll have to have an alibi.
Have you thought?
I've thought about it. I've thought about it all day. And it's all right. It's good. She'll disappear the same way I did.
A fire?
Yeah. Only I'll have to be down at the store when it happens. This place will go up like kindling. And when they pull her out, they'll think it's you. Nobody knows she's up here. And I'll be there to say it is you.
How are you going to...
I've got it all fixed in the cellar. All you have to do is... Here. Use this hatchet. Can you?
Yes. I will.
And then go out to the car and get on the floor of the back seat, under the blanket, lock it from the inside. I'll probably get away right afterwards.
All right, Phil.
I'll see you in the car, and the whole thing shouldn't take more than a couple of hours.
Phil, you're not afraid?
Are you?
No. I'm glad.
Gwen?
Yes?
Come on in.
Have you decided?
Yes. Well, you might as well eat with us. There'll be quite a few details to talk over.
I'm not sure I feel much like eating in this house, Philip.
Yes, well, I don't know about you, but I'm not going to start back hungry. Give me the keys to your car, will you? It's blocking mine, and I'll go down the hill and get a few things for dinner.
Really,
Philip? Will you please stop griping? You've won. Now, give me the keys.
Very well. But I wouldn't try any mad dashes if I were you.
Oh, don't be a fool, Gwen.
No, I don't suppose you would. Alone?
She went in, I took the keys, but first I went around back, down the cellar. I put a lot of old newspapers around the wood pile and doused the whole thing with kerosene. And then I cut a stub of plumber's candle and set it on the papers and lit it. I knew just about how long it'd take the candle to burn down, about 45 minutes. Then I went out and I got in Gwen's car and I started on the mountain without lights. At the drop above the lake, I put it in low and I cramped the wheels and I jumped out. About 40 feet of water. Unless somebody told them where to look, they'd never find the car. Now, all that hadn't taken more than 15 minutes. The walk down to the store took about 20 more.
Well, forget something, Dr. Wolf?
Yeah, like a fool. I forgot my tobacco. I can't get through the night without a pipe.
No, just how it is. Walk down?
Yeah, working up an appetite, you know.
There you are. You folks have callers tonight?
No. Why?
I thought I saw a car go up your way a while back.
Oh, I saw the lights, but they didn't come up. Somebody must have made the wrong turn. Didn't they come back?
I don't know. I was out for a spell. You see that car come back by, Daisy?
Oh, you must have seen it, all right. It was about an hour ago.
Oh, seems like I did hear a car about that.
Sure, that was it.
Yep, pretty sure I did. Well,
Mrs. Dooley don't always see so good, but she hears plenty. Hey, Ma?
And, Pa, looky here.
Huh?
Pa, look it up there. Looks like a fire.
Say, it is. It is a fire. Golly, Doc, that looks like your place.
Well, it couldn't be. But it must be.
Big, too. We better get up there, too.
Do you have your car?
We'll go in the truck. It's right outside. The boys can bring Ma along in the car. You hear that, Ma?
Yeah. Len?
Come on,
Johnny,
Doc.
Get
I sure hope
car.
Everything's all right.
Well, so do I.
cottage was all wood and dry, and it was completely gone by the time we got there. It was the boys who dragged her out of the embers.
I wouldn't look if I was you, Doctor.
Oh, must
have been quick anyway.
Joe.
She's burnt almost to nothing.
You better go on, Doc. We'll take charge of everything.
All right.
Do you want one of the boys to go with you?
No. I'll get in touch with you from town. I'll make the arrangements down there, and I'll send down for the...
Sure. You go on. We'll see to everything.
All right.
Oh, I'm awful sorry, Dr. Wolf.
I climbed into the car, and I started down the mountain. When I was around the first bend, I pulled up and stopped. I reached over with one hand and touched the blanket on the floor behind me. Are you all right, Joe?
Yes, Philip. I'm quite all right.
Gwen. Gwen has never told me how it happened, but of course she killed Joe. We both killed her. And now I know that I'm trapped. I'm hopelessly, irrevocably trapped by the terrible burden of guilt we share between us, as she is. I know now that two people held together by such a frightful bond cannot both go on living, for that bond can be broken in only one way. One of the two must die. And so I write this and place it in the hands of my attorney for safekeeping in order that the true facts be brought to light in the event of such a death. For no matter how innocent it may appear, no matter how natural the cause, how plausible the accident, it will be no accident. It will be murder. Cold-blooded, calculated, deliberate murder.
And now, the local news. Dr. Philip Martin, who has been in poor health for the past 3 months while recovering from an attack of amnesia, died today in his home from an overdose of sleeping sedative. He is survived by his widow, Mrs. Gwen Martin. Thank you, James Stewart, for a splendid performance. And now here again is Mr. James Stewart.
Well, I want to thank Tony Litter and his great cast of actors for making my suspense visit so pleasant. I'm a great suspense fan, and like all of you, I'm looking forward to next week's show when Frederick March appears in Cornell Woolrich's story, The Night Reveals, another gripping study in...
Suspense!
James Stewart can currently be seen starred in the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer production, The Stratton Story. Tonight's suspense play was adapted for radio by Robert Richards from an original story by Vladimir Posner and George Sklar, with music composed by Lucian Morawek and conducted by Leith Stevens. The entire production was under the direction of Anton M. Leader. Next Thursday, same time, hear Frederick March in The Night Reveals.
Buy Autolite resistor spark plugs, Autolite stayful batteries, Autolite electrical parts at your neighborhood Autolite dealers. Switch to Autolite. Good night.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
P&G first put Ma Perkins on the air in 1933, and she lasted 27 years. Only the network changed.
Well, our story took a peculiar turn yesterday. For quite a few weeks, we've noticed the close but strained relationship between Mrs. Mary Lindstrom, Charlie Lindstrom's wife, and young Dr. Peter Ballantyne. Mary says she wants to move away from town, but Peter Ballantyne very plainly doesn't want her to go. And yesterday, Charlie Lindstrom came to see Ma, and he doesn't want to go away either. Ma promised Charlie that there was one thing she'd try to do, about which we're going to learn more right now.
Listen, Ma, I didn't get a chance to see you after Shuffle took you to Fort William. Did Blair call to arrange that meeting you wanted?
Well, the man was real busy, but he was kind enough to give me about 10 minutes. I brought back an envelope, which maybe answers most of the questions.
The true soap opera, so-called, and I believe it was so-called not only because of the sponsor, but also because of the sudsy emotion and antiseptic plots. The true soap opera was a unique radio format. Every quarter-hour show opened with advertising and a long recap of the story up to that point, and closed with more advertising and a long teaser about the next day's show. In between was a slice of turgid melodrama that literally never came to an end. The situation was always an unstable one, like a social barrier, or an irreconcilable passion, or an obsessive love affair, or worse. And it had no solution. The numbers of housewives who followed these programs is awesome. The shows were always very carefully scripted, some by a lady named Elaine Carrington. And nearly half the major soaps came from the office of Frank Hummert and his beautiful wife, Anne. To name a few, The Romance of Helen Trent, Lorenzo Jones and his wife, Belle, David Harum, Our Gal Sunday, Stella Dallas, John's Other Wife, Mary Noble, and Life Can Be Beautiful. Mrs. Hummert herself admits that a winning formula was found.
Mr. Hummert and I together started what I think is the first daytime serial. It was just plain Bill. And that embodied as every serial we had on the air, as every show we had on the air did, the idea that it had to incorporate a fundamental of American life. The parent was less well-educated than the child. This was the case of a barber in the heartland of America. We called it Hartville. Marvelous philosophical sort of man who'd had very little education. In his youth, married a socially prominent girl. She died when their daughter was born. And now, in the first scene, the daughter, Nancy, is coming home. And the question is, having been educated in Eastern schools with all the polish of the East, is she going to be too good for her father? Well, she wasn't, and usually her father was much smarter in his deductions about life than the daughter was or anybody around. And that show became tremendously successful in this terrible part of the depth of the Depression. Nobody had any money to spend on anything. And the Roxy Theater had thousands of seats. And the man said, how would you like to put just plain Bill on the stage? And we'll say that if the people bring a toothpaste carton, they can get in. Well, they had so many people go to the Roxy, they had to have mounted police around the place. Mothers, husbands, fathers, there with children, everybody to see Bill and his daughter Nancy. So that first terrific impact on the lives of people of radio was visible to us.
Now we present once again Mary Noble, backstage wife, the story of a little Iowa girl who married one of America's most handsome actors, Larry Noble, matinee idol of a million other women. The story of what it means to be the wife of a famous star.
We were part of what they called the Hummert stable. There was usually conflict of all kinds, or it seems to me that at one time or another on every single show, someone lost their memory, or someone was indicted for murder.
This is Fran Carlin, who played an extraordinary number of radio roles. Remember her voice from Our Gal Sunday?
Well, Our Gal Sunday, who was married to England's richest and handsomest lord, left on the doorstep by two old miners. Can't she find happiness married to, oh dear, it's been so long, Lord Henry Brinthrop. And Our Gal was always in terrible trouble, it seemed to me, and I... her best friend and next-door neighbor. And, of course, for identification purposes, the daytime soap consisted of repetition. Our gal would say, "And Irene, now I know you're my next-door neighbor and best friend, so it was how you always had this to identify you." On Backstage Wife, when I was doing one of the heavies on it, and I was always locking somebody into the eight-sided octagonal room.
What a strange, strange person Jean is. This sudden maturity, this perception. Yes, and this amazing insight into his father. It's wonderful. But it's also frightening.
This is a page from a new chapter in the lives of Anne Malone and her husband, Jerry. We'll return to the Malones in a moment. Now, in Three Oaks, Bess Pringle is chatting with her daughter-in-law, Elaine. And Elaine is saying...
Oh, why, that reminds me. Do you have any ideas for varying fish fillets?
Well, let me see. You might try coating them with flour and dip them in ketchup and breadcrumbs.
Uh-huh.
Then you pan-fry them in Crisco. We like them that way.
Good old Crisco. I don't know how I'd keep house without it. I save money by buying the 3-pound size, too.
Well, I don't think any shortening, regardless of price or type, can beat Crisco for frying.
The Pringles were a family created especially to talk about the sponsor's product, and I might add that the advertising was endless. A 3-minute pitch was standard, and contests were perennial favorites. Just send your name and address with the last line of this jingle. Stop searching from morning till night for a soap that will wash clothes more bright. Throw out one and all, get high-test Oxidol, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And now, back to our story.
Now, of course, we had absolute, incredible censorship then. You couldn't use a word like damn, that was prohibited. You couldn't possibly have suggested that anyone was having an illegitimate child. As a matter of fact, we had one on called Backstage Wife, 4 o'clock, right ahead of Stella Dallas, 4 in the afternoon. And that was the story of a girl who married a star who was the dream sweetheart of a million other women. So she was always terribly jealous. So one day, she believed that an actress with whom he was playing was in love with him, and he was, Larry, the husband, was in love with the actress. So we had a scene that gave the impression the two had gone into a room alone together. And I got in my office the next day, the Legion of Decency was there. Of course, he was absolutely innocent. They always had to be innocent. You couldn't have anything else happen then.
Please sit down, both of you. I want to talk to you.
Carl and Jerry look at Anne dumbfounded, for she has such a grim, determined expression on her face. But what, Jerry wonders, could Anne possibly know about Phyllis's strange behavior that he and Carl don't?
I have to at least mention two other shows. Remember One Man's Family, a nighttime soap opera? And Vic and Sade, a domestic comedy that reflected just about every nuance of small-town mannerisms of the innocent years, pre-Pearl Harbor.
Now, back again, we go to the small house, halfway up in the next block. This time our scene opens on the front porch. We find Vic, Sade, and Uncle Fletcher seated here and there, awaiting the arrival of Mrs. Keller.
I'm going to show her I am a violent man.
She knows you're no violent man.
You don't know it for sure.
Oh.
I heard the kitchen screen door open.
That's Keller, by George.
Oh, she wouldn't be coming in the back way. I expect it's Rush.
Oh, where'd he go, by the way? I thought he was still around under some foot.
Oh, he sauntered off a few minutes ago. Never even noticed him leave myself.
My landlady, Mrs. Keller, don't know for sure.
Don't let me give the impression that soaps were the only style of daytime radio. There were household hints, cooking shows, shows on how to balance your budget, in case you had a budget back in 1933 or 34, and hundreds of little talks on every conceivable subject the sponsors thought would interest women. Everything except news and world affairs and stuff that mattered, of course. We now bring you, just as we did in 1938, the Norge Musical Kitchen.
A meeting of the Norge Kitchen Committee, transcribed for American Housewives from coast to coast, presents an all-star program with Julius Anderson and Frank Crummett as our special shining lights for today, together with our regular supporting stars, the Norge Rollator Refrigerator, Norge Concentrator Range, Norge Auto-Built Washer, Norge Duotrol Ironer, Norge Fine Air Furnace, and a host of other home modernizing appliances. And here is your hostess and homemaking expert, the queen of the Norge kitchen, Miss Mary Modern.
We've gathered right here in our Norge model kitchen to hear some bits of music and to see if we can't trade a few useful household hints from our question box. But first of all, let's open our meeting with a song. How about it, Miss Sanderson?
All right. How would you like in your own little innocent way?
Well, uh-huh. We'd rather have it, Miss Sanderson, in your own little innocent way.
Thank you.
Thank you, though.
Hello, nephews, nieces, too, mothers and daddies, how are you? This is Uncle Don, all set to go with a meeting on the radio. We'll start off with a little song. To learn the words will not take long, for they're as easy can be. Come on now and sing with me. Hibbity gits, hotsa, ring-bo-ree, Savonia, skiffity, high-low-dee, honey-co-doke with an alley-kazan. Sing this song with your Uncle Dan.
Radio of the 1930s had something for everybody. The first kids' shows were the bedtime story type and all very clean-cut. In the world of Uncle Don, the worst villains were the thumbsuckers and the nail-biters. This is Jack Popoli, chief engineer of WOR during the 20s.
We had the original children's program there called Rainbow House with Big Brother Bob Emery. And the Rainbow House was programmed specifically for the children on Saturday morning. Prior to Uncle Don, we had a Bill McNeary from the New York Sunday Call back in 1923, in which, where he announced the birthdays, he would hang a star out for every child with their name on it. And he was hanging a star in the sky for Mary Jones, who is today 3 years old. Then in addition to that, we had Uncle Don. And Uncle Don, as programming started to expand, had his program every evening between 6:30 and 7 o'clock, which is today prime time news broadcasting.
In Chicago, in 1932, NW Ayer and the Kellogg Company were looking for a similar show. A young person who would sing and play nursery rhymes, and their choice was the singing lady, Irene Wicker.
Somebody suggested, I think it was Erna Phillips, why don't you just make a little story about Christopher Robin and Winnie the Pooh and put a few songs in it. Halfway up the stairs is a stair where I sit, etc. So I did it and won the audition, and they said, now you have to write it. So it turned out I had to start the next week, and I used to have to do it 3 times a day because the old Mr. Kellogg didn't like having records made. Those are the old days of radio when everything was beautifully informal.
Once upon a time, long, long ago, in the land of make-believe, there was a rich, rather strange old lady whose name was Zauberin. She had everything in the world she wanted, except a daughter. And the only person she really loved was Rapunzel, the beautiful young daughter of her gardener and his wife. And there was one thing about her different from anyone else. Her hair, yellow as gold and so long, it had to be looped up ever so many times to keep from trailing on the ground. The day of Rapunzel's 12th birthday, she went to the flower
This number is from the Amateur Hour, circa 1937. Radio had some really talented kids, and a few monsters. There was Baby Rosemarie, the Moylan sisters, Ron Liss, who created the role of Batman's friend and constant companion, Robin, Bobby and Billy Mauk, Billy and Florence Halep. Remember the DeMarco sisters?
You got to give a little, take a little, and let your poor heart break a little. That's the story of, that's the glory of love. You got to laugh a little, cry a little, before the clouds roll by a little. That's the story of, that's the glory of love.
In 1927 came the Horn and Hard Arts Children's Hour, created in Philadelphia by Stan Lee Broza. It stayed on the air 31 years with the same sponsor. And that's some kind of record.
Now, on with the Children's Hour.
Hello again and a big howdy do. Welcome to our review. And when you're hungry, then we welcome you to our Hard Arts too. The finest foods, I know it's price. Coming often, it's our advice. Now on with the show and the songs of the new. Stanley Rosa, that's your cue.
Thank you. Merry Christmas and greetings, good friends.
I was the host of the show, which was a variety show, with youngsters from 4 to 16 years of age. Each show had a theme. It was written and produced by my wife, Esther Broza. It was broadcast each Sunday morning from 11:30 to 12:30, with a regular cast of about 50, with new faces introduced once a month. Some of these were Ezra Stone, who became Henry Aldrich of the famous Aldrich family on network radio. Then there were Kitty Callan, Eddie Fisher, Frankie Avalon, Bobby Rydell. Ann Sheridan, Roddy McDowell as a boy, made his first appearance on the show. The format was a variety show, naturally, but we had sketches, blackouts, musical numbers, dancing numbers, and a theme. We also did little condensed versions of famous musicals and operettas, and with the youngsters, like a scene from The Student Prince.
And then there was a wonderfully imaginative show and a great favorite, Let's Pretend, created, written, and directed by Nyla Mack. That was on Saturdays for years, just before lunch.
Song, it will make us strong, and it makes us shout, hooray! It's good for growing babies and grown-ups too, to eat. For all the family's breakfast, you can feed Cream of Wheat.
Cream of Wheat, the great American family cereal, presents Let's Pretend.
Uncle Bill, with all these sounds and noises in today's story, isn't it about time for us to play our sound effects game again?
That's the very idea I had, Sybil. Once upon a time, there was a young man named Jimmy Jones who hated to get up in the morning. Even his old dog Spike couldn't get him up, not even by barking his head off like this. Well, sir, do you know what finally did the trick? That's right.
One of the players was Sybil Trent, who started on the air as Baby Sybil when she was only 3 1/2.
In 1935, I think it was, I was invited to audition for Let's Pretend. Nyla Mack was the director, the producer, and the writer of Let's Pretend. And she was a former actress. She had appeared with Ms. Zimova, and she was really a very wonderful lady. It was on for 24 years. I was on it for 20. And what was wonderful about being on Let's Pretend, we were a sort of a stock company of people, same people every week. And we grew up on the show. After all, it was on for 20 years. And so we got to play just about every part because she didn't believe in a star system. And so one week I'd be the fairy princess, and the next week I might be one of the little fairies or a scullery maid or something, you know. And we were not sponsored for many years. We were a sustaining program because Nyla Mack just wouldn't accept any sponsor. She felt it was a very special kind of show and that you should have something that appealed just to children. So I guess we were sponsored about 13 years by the Cream of Wheat Company. And I used to sing the commercials about cream of wheat is so good to eat.
It's Adventure Time with Orphan Annie.
Done justice to the kids' adventure shows. I think all the major comic strip characters did a stint on radio, starting with the Gumps, with Agnes Moorehead playing Min Gump. There was Captain Midnight, I Love a Mystery, Don Winslow of the Navy. And here's one for you trivia lovers.
The Adventures of Frank Merriwell. Tonight's episode, Frank Confesses in the Dark. Well, let's go back to Frank Merriwell's last adventure and see where we left it. In a bad spot, I'm afraid. You see, Frank has always been a model student at Fardale Academy, but the last we heard of him, he was playing poker with a bunch of cadets who call themselves the Black Sheep. Now, playing poker isn't a very healthy pastime for young military students, is it? But this is the way it happened, how Frank Merriwell happened to get in with this crowd.
Have you tried Wheaties? They're whole wheat with all of the bran. Won't you try Wheaties? For wheat is the best food of man. They're crispy, they're crunchy, the whole year through. Jack Armstrong never tires of them, and neither will you.
So just
buy Wheaties, the best breakfast food in the land. Wave the flag for Hudson High, boys. Show them how we stand. Ever shall our team be champions, known throughout the land.
It was on for 18 years, from 1933. It was criticized, laughed at, and parodied as Jack Headstrong, the all-American dope. Nevertheless, the kids adored it, and it sold blizzards of Wheaties and warehouses of premiums too numerous to mention. Here's the style.
Yesterday, after the Pelican caught fire, Jack offered to take a line across the packed ice floes so that Captain Hands and his men might be rescued with a breeches boy. Here we are on deck. Jack has just started across.
He's starting to wave his arms and shout. Some of the men are running to the rails. They're looking this way and pointing. They've seen Jack at last. Hands must have spotted him.
Good.
Oh, they're spotted.
Good for
I'm
him.
So glad.
It's about time. Now watch close, Northrop. Hands will know what we're doing. You can soon tell whether they've got tackle or not.
He's shouting some kind of order. The men are running from the bow. They're going to do something, all right.
They'll save a lot of time if they can get ready.
Aye, and they'll know it.
They've got tackle, all right. They're running to the...
This is Henry Morgan. On the next two sides, George Hamilton Coombs will play for you a few classics in sports, some musical shows, and begin the long story that culminated in World War II. But in the meantime, here is what may be old radio's campiest moment. The Grand March of the Breakfast of Champions.
From Westinghouse and KDKA, that was part 6 in this ongoing series entitled Serial Programs. Prior to that was an episode of Suspense from May 19th, 1949, called Consequence. It's now time for me to begin the process of releasing the key and returning the room to you, Thursday audience, for your final closing comments, questions, and concerns.
Hey, Daniel, that was good. I enjoyed both all the shows and clips. That is really good. What's the name of that record that you're playing?
Good picks, Daniel.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Thank you. It's something that Larry gave me. It's from Westinghouse and KDKA. There are 12 of these, and we're on part six, so we're halfway through. And if it's right, there's a two parts to this next part, which is has to do with World War II. So that'll be the next part one and part two, dealing with that.
Well, I really enjoyed all the shows and clips. It was really good. And that suspense show was really, I like how it ended. I feel sorry for, the main character, Mr. Martin there, but that was pretty funny. He ended up dying and the wife's going to get charged for the murder, hopefully, if his private document gets
gosh. And killing both of those people. I mean, the first one was an accident, but the second one was on purpose.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it seems to me like the second one, there must have been a showdown with Gwen and Joe because, her
I'm
wife.
Sure it was. I'm sure it was. This has two episodes. The first one was, I think, on the 21st of February in 46 or 47. And then there was this one in 49. And I chose this one because the audio quality was much better.
Oh, this consequence show was done before?
Right.
Where'd you get that one?
On YouTube.
Was it? Oh, okay. Because I've been downloading the Suspense Project every day, and I have that one, and it has the Autolite ad at the beginning and at the in the middle of the show, and they were cut out of yours, but then they did have the little thing with the operator at the end.
And I didn't know that there was a. Usually with them, there is one at the beginning and the middle. But in this case, I was like, oh, okay, well, at least they put it at the end. I didn't realize that.
Well, they just left it. Yeah, but usually there's the beginning with Harlow Wilcox and Hap.
Yeah, if I'd known that, I would have asked you for the.
Yeah, because I went and checked my the folder where I've been putting, because sometimes, you'll download more than one, and there's a network one and an AFRS one. Mm. But that one sounded too clean to be AFRS. Somebody just cut them out for some reason.
For some reason, yeah. I checked,
yeah, and I there was like a them in there.
Couple that, of different sources on YouTube, and they were all the same. So I was like, well, somebody got this from somewhere, yeah.
Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello, Patty.
Hi. I came in a little late, but I'm very interested in this KDKA.
Well, of course you are.
I have the one that has five discs. No. It's only in five parts. Is this a different one?
I don't know. I've got 1 through 12, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, this has to be. Is there any way I can get this?
Yeah. Let's see. How can we do this? Somehow we'll Dropbox it and send you a link for it.
Yeah, I need to have.
And I don't even know if it's the whole thing. I'm going to have to check with Larry because it says up to, I don't remember, whatever I think it says through 69 or 70, but the 12th only goes through like 52 or so, unless they, tack it on and don't say so in the little promo for the file. So we'll have to see.
Because I have a version of this, I think. But it's not, I don't think it's the same one. And so I must have it. I think I have a Dropbox.
Well, what you could do, Daniel.
Yes, darling.
One by, what do you got? 12, six of them or 12 of them?
Six.
I'm asking Daniel, what are they? What format does he have? Daniel? Daniel. I was going to say, if there's six, I don't know, are they six records and one and two sides to each record?
Okay, no meaning.
There he is. Daniel? Maybe he went to go look.
This was the thing with Jack Boger.
The KDKA thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think there are 6 CDs to it, so that would mean 12, right?
As if you, yeah. I know Daniel's limited on Dropbox size, but I'm not. So
okay,
puts,
I have to check and see what
if,
I have.
If he puts one by one in the folder with me, and then I can zip them, and then I can send you a Dropbox link, and you don't even have to have a Dropbox account. You just click on the link, and it'll download.
Would you do that?
That's what I was trying to do, but Daniel's not. He must be looking for him.
I know. I wouldn't mind getting a copy of that stuff, too. It's really good.
Let's all gang up on him and we'll get him.
Yeah, let's get him. Let's
go. Well, we can't do nothing, Daniel.
If he's not there, yeah.
But anyway, he will be.
I must have this.
He's just right muted. He must have gone looking for him.
Okay, just if you're trying to send a Dropbox link, if there'll be a 1 at the end of the file.
Yeah, I know. I do it all the time.
I thought you did, Brad, but
I'm not sure if I have Dropbox, but must be a way to send a link, right?
But you don't.
Well, there
I
is.
Don't,
like,
I don't
like,
think you
like
would.
Marcia's
need
saying
you don't need to unzip it if you.
No. I will send a zip because it is a smaller file because he's going to have a bunch of stuff in it.
Oh, okay.
And then I will send a link, a Dropbox link to the zip file.
Okay,
and then it's one file. And when you click on the Dropbox link in the email, it downloads it to your downloads folder.
Right.
Then you go to your downloads folder. You find the zip file that you downloaded from Dropbox. You put your focus is on the file. You open the context menu and it will say extract. And it will extract it. And then you have a folder that's got the same name as the zip file, but it's a folder. And
right.
In that folder are all the files.